You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 1st, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Supreme Court primed to abolish race-conscious college admissions and more. Also on the program today, John Roberts temporarily blocks Congress from seeing Donald Trump's tax returns. Arizona Libertarian candidate drops out, endorses Blake Masters. Not sure it's going to make a difference. And I should say, as a former potential Libertarian presidential nominee, I'm a little bit disappointed. Let's stick to our guns, folks. And
weakness, no pun intended. Nowhere. I mean,
meanwhile, no. Key governor races seem to start to lean to the Republicans. AIPAC once again attacking Summer Lee, and Bolsonaro yet to come out of his cave and concede. DOJ blocks book publishing merger. Israeli election has the highest early turnout of this century. Good news, grain ships continue to leave Ukraine, sliding by a supposed Russian embargo. And Republicans double down on their attacks on Nancy Pelosi for the attack on her husband. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. I've got a little bit of a sugar hangover. Emma Vigeland, welcome today. I hope you'll bear with me.
Yeah, no problem.
Where were you eating?
You have the sugar hangover.
I have the sugar hangover because I just tried to stop Saul from eating too much candy, which did not go well. We both ended up sick. So there it is. But Halloween is back, ladies and gentlemen. Although I got to say, it did not seem as full on last night. I don't know if it was because of the impending rain or what. But
I saw a bunch of kids out when I was.
It was crowded. It's just I remember like from like 4 years ago, it was like mayhem. And this seems less mayhem-y.
Feels like of the holidays at the end of the year, Halloween got hit the hardest by COVID. I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. I was going to say we'll talk more about that, but we won't.
Okay. Anyway, Halloween sounds like a total nightmare for your inability to stop eating chocolate once you start.
It's a real problem. I really don't have an ability to stop eating candy. And
you remember those nut things?
Yeah, of course I do. I remember every piece of candy I've ever eaten
that I hid under my desk.
It's the only thing
I
can remember.
Which I was not successful at because Sam found them.
Yeah, what happened to them? Oh, you ate them all?
Probably.
Okay. I think I actually took them home after the second or third time Sam found them.
There we go.
All right, let's get into this. We have seen the evolution of the response to failed attack on Nancy Pelosi, successful, I guess, on her husband. But the guy was there to attack Nancy Pelosi. We have seen the evolution of the way that, I don't know, Republicans, conservatives, I mean, there's really fundamentally, there's no difference between any of these people, whether they are lawmakers or whether they're, you know, YouTube guys or whatever it is. It evolved from there's something really strange about this story, like not believing it, to creating a conspiracy
QAnon
alternate theory, which, of course, let's be clear, This is the way that almost every story that does not immediately comport to what they want goes.
Yeah.
I mean,
this was Antifa did Gen 6 the day that happened.
Exactly. And I mean, that's a perfect example. They will then sort of like contort the facts to immediately, and not even the facts, it's just like pure speculation.
Any like remote anomaly.
And just immediately have it comport to their vision of what this was going down. Of course, it wasn't an attack on Nancy Pelosi, despite the fact that, like, literally, we have the top fundraising congressperson in the country, Marjorie Taylor Greene, giving speeches saying that this is not exaggeration. Nancy Pelosi has committed treason. The penalty for treason in this country is death.
Yeah, not ambiguous at all.
And no,
Carrie Lake was just joking about the attack on Paul Pelosi at her own campaign event, getting cheap laughs, saying Nancy Pelosi, well, she's got protection when she's in D.C. Apparently, her house doesn't have a lot of protection, so they're using this to rile up the base.
Right, but the idea that like Nancy Pelosi could be attacked, completely impossible. Surely it must be that her husband is having an affair with a man, and they got into a lover's quarrel, and the hammer came out. That, of course, is the much more reasonable explanation. And then when they realize, like, oh, that's not going to actually, at one point somebody's going to figure that out. But the thing that they've understood now is they understand that they can put out this information, and because the nature of their audience is such that they only get their information from one sort of closed loop, that all they need to do is introduce this into the bloodstream. And if they spend no effort to sort of like clean the bloodstream, I don't know what the perfect metaphor is for that, then it just continues to circulate around. I guarantee you, you could go to a Trump rally in 6 to 8 months from now, interview people about what happened, and they will tell you,
mm-hmm. It,
regardless of what else comes out, regardless of the guy goes to prison, regardless of anything, they will start with that story. Well, that will be
for Matt's Antifa example, that was said on the first day. Oh, it's probably Antifa. And we're still talking about it. They just need to have a barricade against facts right away, and they'll stick with that forever.
Yeah, they need to attack coherence at every chance that they can, cut off a whole bunch of people into like fantasy land.
Yeah.
And now it's evolved into, and then what happens is they start with the sort of the, think about it in terms of like street couture and haute couture, right? Like the street couture is, in this instance, is he had a lover, they had a lover spat, they're trying to cover it up, et cetera, et cetera. And then the haute couture is that, like, I've now analyzed this guy's background, and even though he's spent his whole, the past couple of years, like, deep into QAnon stuff, even though he's been, the media he's consuming, all is consistent with someone who is convinced that Nancy Pelosi is the devil and she needs to die.
I mean, he's writing about holla hoax.
Yeah, I mean, then some of the haute couturists come in and they sort of do some of the backfilling. Well, and they're just covering the spectrum of people who consume this media. And then you get the I don't know what the third level of couture is that, like, you know what? We don't even need an explanation. This guy's a hero. And here's Charlie Kirk.
I mean, I'm looking at Politico.com. I'm looking at the New York Times. I'm looking at all these places. And there's a little bit of mention here. For example, Politico says top Republicans reject any link between GOP rhetoric and Paul Pelosi assault. Of course you should reject any link. Why is the Republican Party, why is the conservative movement to blame for gay schizophrenic nudists that are hemp jewelry makers breaking into somebody's home, or maybe not breaking into somebody's home? Why are we to blame for that exactly? And why is he still in jail? Why has he not been bailed out? By the way, if some if some amazing patriot out there in San Francisco or the Bay Area wants to really be a midterm hero, someone should go and bail this guy out. I bet his bail's like $30,000 or $40,000. Bail him out and then go ask him some questions. I wonder what his bail is. They're going after him with attempted murder, political assassination, all this sort of stuff. I'm not qualifying it. I think it's awful. It's not right.
Ish.
But why is it that in Chicago, you're able to commit murder and be out the next day? Why is it that you're able to trespass, second-degree murder,
pause
arson?
I can answer that question. The reason why it's in Chicago that you can do attempted murder and get out on bail the next day is because you can't. Because you can't. That's to the extent that there's no cash bail, incidentally, in the reforms that have taken place in Illinois, it is nonviolent crimes. It is nonviolent crimes. Bail is bail. If there's no one there to pay $30,000, $40,000, you know, Charlie Kirk, I've seen your filings. I know how much you get paid. And that's just the ones that you declare. If anybody has access to $30,000 or $40,000to help a patriot out, it seems to me it would be Charlie Kirk. All right, but continue.
Ago, you're able to commit murder and be out the next day. Why is it that you're able to trespass, second-degree murder, arson, threat of public official, cashless bail? This happens all over San Francisco, but if you go after the Pelosis, oh, you're let out immediately.
What? Yeah, he got a little confused.
Yeah,
there.
It's
he's
hard.
Not being let out.
He's struggling to fit his like Fred lawless San Francisco there, yeah. narrative into why is this guy being held and not released back into the streets.
But there it is. I mean, he just summed up all of it, right? Like, I'm going to reference the completely fictitious speculation. I'm going to bring that into the sort of haute critique and the haute sort of like analysis of where this guy's true political feelings are. And then they're going to make it about, I mean, and it's quite, I almost think you are almost necessarily having emotional issues if you're attempting to assassinate anybody unless you are being paid to do it, frankly. And the real question is like, you know, what's the likelihood of reaching someone who is in this type of emotional state and providing them a narrative where they become convinced that they're doing the right thing? Like, how many people do you have to announce Pizzagate to until it lands upon someone's ears who goes in and shoots up a pizza shop in Washington, D.C.?
I mean, and this guy also was spouting Pizzagate conspiracy theories, right? So these conspiracy theories, they create action in people who don't
of course.
Are mentally unwell. It's
and,
obvious.
And but. Also, let's also be clear here. That is why there is a fundamental difference between sitting in a bar with one individual and turning to him and going like, man, I think Nancy Pelosi has committed treason. And frankly, she should be sentenced to death. Why there's a difference between doing that and having a YouTube show with 100,000 or a million viewers, or being a presidential candidate, or being a president, or being the most prolific Republican fundraiser and announcing it at a rally. There's a fundamental difference between those things, because if the calculation is that it is people who have a specific emotional disturbance and then may act upon a narrative created for them, you have a responsibility to understand that if I broadcast this message to 10 million people, it is the likelihood of someone acting upon that is far greater than if I say it in my living room to people I'm having cocktails with. And they know what they're doing. They know it's impossible for them not to reach the ears of those people. I mean, Ted Kaczynski had obviously some deep-seated emotional issues, right? But like the idea that he wasn't driven by also this narrative and this ideology that he formed is ridiculous. Now, he happened to have developed that more or less on his own, like literally. But if you're feeding this and you are ostensibly a pillar of society, which generically speaking, the president, a congressperson, someone on TV, you're a voice of authority.
You ask for that authority because you are a member or the founder of a media organization. You go with Turning Points USA crowds and you speak to thousands and thousands of people. You're actively seeking said authority and then you're pushing it away once the consequences come to you.
You could even take that a step further. Like, what is Turning Points USA mission? It is to go out and by the use of words to create narratives and to deliver propaganda. And I'm saying that value neutral. I mean, on some level, we're a propaganda outfit as well.
Totally.
They're going out to change the minds and the actions of people out there. So just in the way that Charlie Kirk goes and debates me at Politicon to make the point that whatever it is, government bad, government can't do anything. He's also got to own that, like, when he's out there saying, like, a patriot would come to this guy's rescue, mm-hmm. that it's patriotic to support a guy who, for whatever reason, tried to assassinate somebody. He's got to own that, too.
And he also, people forget, helped pay for buses to take people to the Capitol on January 6th. That is an active, like, political operation, just another piece of evidence for the credibility that he's trying to create for himself while skirting responsibility. But, you know, it is also interesting, too. He's not being held. There's no bail that's been posted, and prosecutors are asking for there to not be any bail. So I am curious if Charlie Kirk does try to fundraise off of this, where this money actually goes.
It would be fun just putting that out there.
And the tell in all this is that they keep going to like the nudist angle to try to imply a sort of left-wing bent to this guy when we actually know about like sort of ideological content. And surprise, a lot of their propaganda is in this guy's head, like the Derek Chauvin supporting stuff, Mike Lindell election conspiracies. I think this is the Washington Post. Online post under DePape's name repeated false claims about COVID vaccines, questioned whether climate change is real, and displayed an illustration of a zombified Hillary Clinton dining on human flesh.
It couldn't be clearer, but that doesn't matter. It's just all about getting ahead of the narrative and pretending that that's not the case.
Exactly.
All planted.
Got a couple of sponsors on today's program. This one I'm super excited about because I haven't gotten the product yet, but I've been eyeing this for quite a while. It's going to be obvious to people why. One of our sponsors today is Lomi. Am I pronouncing that right? Lomi? Lomi? Lomi by Pella. Okay, what this is, it's and I've watched about 1,000 videos on this, and when we had the chance to advertise for it, I was psyched to do it. It is essentially like, I don't know, it's about yay big, and it turns your food scraps essentially into compost, into dirt with a push of a button.
Whoa.
It's a countertop electric composter. Like I say, turns scraps into dirt in under 4 hours. There's no smell when it runs. It's very quiet. Like I say, I don't have this, but I have watched about 5 million, no, I mean, honestly, far too many sort of, what do you call it, reviews and videos about this. You're going to have way less garbage each week. It depends on where you live as to whether, like, that means no raccoons or that just means that, like, you're not going to, you're not having this slop in there. You're throwing out a lot less, which is good for the environment. It means it's not going into landfills. It means it's not creating methane. So from an environmental standpoint, it's really great. And then if you garden like I do, or if you plant stuff in the windowsills like I do, you grow it in this, and your plants are going to go crazy. Just the idea, and you know, some of this is happening in New York City. You already have the opportunity to compost, but much easier to bring down dirt than it is food scraps. But also, this stuff is like, they bag this stuff. They sell it at hardware stores and at nursery, you know, nurseries and whatnot. It really is amazing. I mean, we're going to see a lot more of this. If you want to start making a positive environmental impact, you want to just clean up after dinner that much easier, Lomi is perfect for you. Head to lomi.com/majority. That's LOMI.com/majority. Use the promo code majority. Get $50 off your Lomi. I'm going to get one of these soon. I mean, really soon. Like, it's,
it sounds incredible.
It's en route, I hope.
I want a compost, and this makes it super easy, if, especially if you're in an apartment, right? If it's able to fit on the countertop.
It's $50 off when you head to lomi.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout. Food waste is gross. Lomi is your solution. The holidays just around the corner. Lomi will make the perfect gift for someone on your shopping list. No more of those like tins that you live there. All right. Also, one of our sponsors today, Aura. I've talked about this quite a bit. You know, I enjoy pursuing scam emails. I enjoy I am sometimes a little bit iffy on it. I also am very worried about my, you know, identity theft and et cetera, et cetera. Aura has been a huge solution on this. Aura helps you fight back against annoying websites that make your personal information public by automatically requesting of your removal of your info. This helps reduce robocalls, and frankly, also from a security standpoint, I like that fact. Mm. I may be a little bit more paranoid about such things because of what we do here, but very helpful. Also, Aura protects you from scammers and hackers, because what it does is it basically crawls the, what do they call it? Scrapes the dark web, where this is where, like, folks who have done hacking, they'll sell your information, whether it's social security numbers, whether it's passwords and emails, whether it's other personal ID. Aura scrapes the dark web, looks for your family emails, passwords, social security numbers. This includes your kids, too, if you want. And it alerts you fast if you find anything. In fact, when I put my emails in, it pops up on where my email and passwords have been compromised. Aura gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries. So if someone tries to open a loan or a credit card in your name, bingo bango, you know about it, you can shut the stuff down. Or it's got a VPN that allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. Also, Aura protects your devices from viruses, from malware, from spyware, so it makes it much harder for people to break in. Aura helps you manage what your kids can do on their devices. You can restrict specific apps. You can set screen time limits. You can even set focus times to ensure your kid is doing their homework instead of binging on YouTube. Believe me, very helpful. Aura's password manager lets you store and access your online passwords securely and conveniently. It's got all those things. And you could try Aura for free for 14 days at aura.com/majority. You put your email in, you'll see immediately what it can do. You're going to be shocked to how much to find out how much of your private information Aura finds exposed online over the next 2 weeks during your free trial. That's aura.com/majority. Try Aura for free for 14 days. Lastly, Nutrafol. We've they've sponsored this program in the past. And basically what it is, and you can look this up, Nutrafol is one of the only, and maybe to my mind, the only, but I'm not 100% sure about that, It is a holistic approach that promotes healthier hair and hair growth, as well as just broadly speaking, your whole body's wellness. This works for men and for women. And generally, you sort of have to choose between your health, broadly speaking, and the desire to grow some hair, because you're taking some type of oral or other type of drug. And in this instance, Nutrafol is basically just vitamins and minerals in a combination, no drugs, no compromises. It is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement. It is clinically shown to improve your hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage. Nutrafol's hair growth nutraceuticals goes beyond genetics, and it targets the various reasons why you'd have thinning hair. Stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, aging, lifestyle. Sometimes you may have, some type of disease or something to that effect. Nutrafol addresses all of those things. It is a physician formulated. It is using a natural medical grade ingredients. It is Nutrafol is drug free. It is patented, and it provides reliable and visible results without compromising your sexual health. In a clinical study, men showed progressive improvement in hair growth and thickness after 3 and 6 months. It's no wonder that Nutrafol is trusted and recommended by more than 3,000 top doctors. Don't sleep on this. You can grow thicker, healthier hair, and now is the time to start. And support our show by going to Nutrafol.com. You enter the promo code MAJORITY, you save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's available only to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code MAJORITY. All right, let's get into... and just a reminder, all of these links will be on our YouTube and podcast description, and it... broadly, it's your support that makes this show possible. So if you want the free show free of commercials, join themajorityreport.com. All right, let's get into... There was yesterday oral arguments in what very well may be the final case in this country for a long time about race-conscious college admissions. Just a brief history of affirmative action in this country. Really, in the modern era, because you could argue 14th Amendment, affirmative action. Reconstruction was very much about affirmative action. The introduction of public schools, the introduction of the 14th Amendment, a whole host of ideas that the radical Republicans wanted in the 1870s, let's say, late 1860s, was a function of recognizing that you can't simply free millions of slaves and just say, like, okay.
Figure it out.
All good.
Yeah.
And the next wave came in the wake of the Civil Rights Act in 1965. Where not only did the legacy of slavery remain, but this country had ongoing racial discrimination. And whether it was in the context of housing, which is the number one developer of intergenerational wealth, whether it was in the context of, I don't know, Social Security and what professions are, what jobs are going to be. Considered whether
what jobs have labor protections,
whether it was political power after, essentially the pogroms of during Reconstruction, the rolling back of the franchise for black people, such that you had to have a Voting Rights Act in 1965. I mean, all of these things Quotas in higher education, quotas in jobs. I mean, that would, were geared towards suppressing specifically black people, other minorities at the time. And so in the modern era, there was an awareness that we as a society need to encourage and to make sure, because we don't have the systems built, because over 200 and some odd years, 300 years, all of our systems to find people and make people avail, you know, like give people opportunity, were warped towards white people in this country. And the merit structures that we had were also developed with the idea that we're going to reward white people. If I'm the if I'm great at you know, hitting a baseball, and I'm in charge of things, I'm going to make the highest value that's out there your ability to hit a baseball.
Yeah. So the correct framing of around affirmative action, and we'll get into this and what they're contending, is not that affirmative action violates the Equal Protection Clause. It's that everything else
right.
violates.
It's the fulfillment.
It's that the structure of our society is what is in conflict with the Equal Protection Clause.
Exactly. And so the first case that basically capped people's attempts to sort of like create some equity in society was the Bakke case. And that was in 1978 off the top of my head. And this one came in California, and it found that at the Supreme Court, it found that colleges, because these are all sort of like college questions, right? Universities. Colleges could consider race to build a diverse student body. And the idea was that we're not trying to help black people per se, or for that matter, Native people, Latino people, Asian people. The idea is that we want that there is value to everybody, including white people, to be educated in an environment where there are a varied life experiences that very often translate into varied perspective on things. In the same way that conservatives are saying, like, we're being silenced. Our views are not being allowed to be shared at universities, which, of course, is absurd. Not the case. But they do have an argument in that it's important to have varied perspectives. But it's also important for everyone around you to be around other people with varied perspectives. This is a legitimate societal goal because we want better citizens. And you get better citizens, particularly in a country like ours, when you have a sense that there are people who are different than you, that there are varied perspectives, that we must learn to work together. That the challenges that are associated with having a heterogeneous society are also are ultimately our strengths. And the Bakke case, basically, on that basis, argued that you can be conscious of race as a factor in creating diversity on your campus. Like, you can also be conscious of, do they live in a city? Do they live in a rural area? Do they go to a private school? Do they go to a public school?
Are their parents big donors to said university?
Well, that's, yes. I mean,
I can say, like, my acceptance into NYU, I think, was in part because I was in North Dakota and applying for
without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I mean, KBJ made this argument in oral arguments, but just that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court affirm this principle. And again, 1978, do the math. I can't. What is that, 35 years ago? 1978? Yeah.
44.
Shit. It's just saying, I think of like 1970s. I think like it's not possible because 1978, I have like a vivid recollection of. And the idea that that was 44 years ago is terrifying.
Is it really 44? Yeah. It might be more.
No, it's 44.
It's not more.
Okay.
All right, whatever. Between 30 and 45, 5 years. So this is another longstanding principle that is out there. Then in 2003, there was the Grutter case. In 2016, Fisher versus Texas. They reaffirmed this idea. The 14th Amendment, which we mentioned, and you would think this is going to be important because one of the things that became clear yesterday in the oral arguments was that the originalists and the textualists and this and that, they weren't even making a constitutional argument. They were making what you would call a policy argument. Okay? Which, A, they supposedly completely eschew as a methodology of approaching legal decisions, right? Like, that's verboten. You don't consider the implications on society when you decide. It's strictly about the law. They can't do that because the law, in this instance, is the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond statute. It's constitutional. And the 14th Amendment, you cannot believe the 14th Amendment was not written with the idea that we don't, that it was a complete coincidence that we had just freed the slaves. It was a conscious effort to make sure that we integrated slaves into society, and by doing so, and in doing so, we also make sure that they get all of the benefits of society, that they become first-class citizens, that we do not have an underclass in this country that is a function of race. That's important because it's not being you. There are instances where you cannot be blind to race. If your goal is to make sure that we do not have an underclass that is a function of race.
Yeah, particularly when that underclass was formed as a function of politics.
Yes, I mean, you simply can't apply the 14th Amendment in a colorblind way if you want to achieve what the 14th Amendment was written to achieve. So, most of the arguments, apparently, from the right members of the court were all sort of sub-constitutional level, mm-hmm. if you will. Apparently, in the Grutter case, Sandra Day O'Connor made a prediction that we won't need to allow for race consciousness in college admissions by 2028, which was maybe a slightly over-optimistic. And I can understand at that point maybe why someone in 2003 might say, you know, 25 years should take care of this. But, and it was cited, apparently, by, well, first of all, apparently Thomas in the dissent said, that's the date then.
Yeah, great. That's why putting those kinds of just little nuggets in your opinions, whether it be concurring or dissenting, are helpful for bad actors like Clarence Thomas. That's why he just did it with abortion and all the other roadmaps for conservatives to challenge, to basically saying, use this to go after gay rights, et cetera,
right.
Use this case.
And apparently Amy Coney Barrett brought it up too. But the thing in my estimation that they're missing is that, like, if you accept that it was 2028, obviously, like, no one's a soothsayer. They obviously are prepared to overturn this, you know, 6 years earlier. But if you accept the concept that sometime in the future, things are going to be fixed, then you're also acknowledging that in the present, they're broken. If you accept that it's right. going to take 25 years of this and then we should be done, then you accept what the mission is. And the idea that they're going to cite this and then overturn it and just say like, oh, well, the timing was off. They have no constitutional argument against it. And to look at essentially where black people are in terms of like wealth disparity, income disparity, unemployment, if you were to look at life expectancy, if you were to look at maternal death rates, if you, I mean, by almost any metric, you could see that, like, yeah, we still have a problem in this country. And not just with black people. I mean, you can see it in the context of Latino people. You can see it in the case of Native people. I mean, on and on.
And you can see it within the context of, say, voting. And this is where you can see their ruling on how racism is essentially over. And that's why there can be less oversight on southern states and opening the floodgates for voter restrictions is because it's all their partner cases, Frank, honestly, in their efforts to undercut the 14th Amendment by saying that these guardrails that we put in place as a way to enforce the 14th Amendment and equal protection, they are in and of themselves either null and void or racist on their own.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, you'd have to. And you know, that's the thing with the Constitution. You have to choose that was a wrong amendment. Let's play a couple of clips. I mean, I think Ketanji Brown Jackson, now she had to recuse herself. There's actually two cases up in front of the court. And they were argued more or less on the same day, I think on the same day. One was involving Harvard. Harvard in the trial court and in the appeals court was found, the plaintiffs argue that Asian Americans are being discriminated against because Harvard is, as part of their overall perspective on admissions, considering race as one of, like, I don't know, 20 factors in their creation of a diverse student body. And the argument is they're being discriminatory towards Asian Americans. On the trial court level, on the appellate level, they were found not to be discriminatory towards Asian Americans. She had to sit that case out because she heard it on the appeal level. So she is talking about the North Carolina case specifically, and she brings up an example. Remember, you're in North Carolina now. That is specific to North Carolina, but it really does illustrate sort of how legacies can impact outcomes today. Legacies that are hundreds of years old can impact outcomes today.
Pluses. And so what I'm worried about is that the rule that you're advocating, that in the context of a holistic review process, a university can take into account and value all of the other background and personal characteristics of other applicants, but they can't value race. What I'm worried about is that seems to me to have the potential of causing more of an equal protection problem than it's actually solving. And the reason why I get to that possible conclusion is thinking about two applicants who would like to have their family backgrounds credited in this applications process, and I'm hoping to get your reaction to this hypothetical. The first applicant says, I'm from North Carolina. My family has been in this area for generations, since before the Civil War, and I would like you to know that I will be the fifth generation to graduate from the University of North Carolina. I now have that opportunity to do that, and given my family background, it's important to me that I get to attend this university. I want to honor my family's legacy by going to this school. The second applicant says, I'm from North Carolina. My family's been in this area for generations, since before the Civil War, but they were slaves. and never had a chance to attend this venerable institution. As an African-American, I now have that opportunity, and given my family background, it's important to me to attend this university. I want to honor my family legacy by going to this school. Now, as I understand your no race conscious admissions rule, these two applicants would have a dramatically different opportunity to tell their family stories and to have them count. The first applicant would be able to have his family background considered and valued by the institution as part of its consideration of whether or not to admit him, while the second one wouldn't be able to, because his story is in many ways bound up with his race and with the race of his ancestors. So I want to know, based on how your rule would likely play out in scenarios like that, why excluding consideration of race in a situation in which the person is not saying that his race is something that has impacted him in a negative way. He just wants to have it honored, just like the other person has their personal background family story honored. Why is telling him no not an equal protection violation?
Well, I think because if it is the racial aspect of the application, then that the equal protection requires that people of all races be treated equally. Now, certainly UNC shouldn't give a legacy benefit if they don't want to give a legacy benefit. There's no obligation they do that.
And no, of but course, you, I'm sorry, but you college, said you said it was okay if they give him a legacy benefit. And what I'm saying is that in almost exactly the same set of circumstances, a student or an applicant who is African-American and who would like to have the fact that he's been in North Carolina for generations through his family and that they've never had a chance to go to this school honored and considered, and it's bound up with his race. You say, I think, that he's not allowed to say that and that the university is not allowed to take that into account. And because it relates to race, precisely because it relates to race, I think you might have an equal protection problem in saying that he can't get credit for that when someone else can.
Well, for purpose of the hypothetical, I am assuming that the only significant factor in that story happens to be the fact that of the race of the applicant and that their race was previously barred from attending UNC. Obviously, nothing stops UNC from honoring those who have overcome slavery or recognizing its past contribution to racial segregation. But the question is that a basis to make decisions about admission of students who were born in 2003? And I don't think that it necessarily is. I don't think that the Equal Protection Clause suggests that it is. There are many factors in an application like that might be appropriate to consider, including if they are first-generation college or including if they are socioeconomically depressed. But if the only difference is between a white student and a black student, I don't think the Equal Protection Clause permits the admissions decision to hinge on that.
All right. And to be clear, he is trying. There's a bit of like a straw man here. Because it's not the only factor. There's no instance where colleges or universities are saying, this person's black, we're going to let them in.
Yep.
This person's white, we're not going to let them in. That doesn't happen. But what her hypothetical illustrates is that there are things that you cannot separate from people's race. And being a legacy, is that what they call it? Legacy? Like when you're a
legacy admission?
A legacy admission. You just don't have that opportunity, certainly in the same way.
Yeah.
If you're a black person in this country, because, I mean, that in and of itself, I think, really sort of destroys a lot of this argument.
But that's what they want. They want the hallowed halls of University of North Carolina and Harvard to be institutions to continue power structures that have been in place in this country that are white. And, I mean, just some context on who that guy is who is speaking there, Patrick Strawbridge. He's an attorney for a law firm that has represented Donald Trump. And both of the attorneys arguing this in front of the Supreme Court are former law clerks to Clarence Thomas and partners at that firm. Now, Ketanji Brown Jackson recused herself because she previously ruled in that Harvard case because of her connections to the case. This is the second time, at least in recent memory, on some of these more important cases heard by Clarence Thomas where he has refused to do so.
I mean, are you suggesting that Clarence Thomas should not hear from two lawyers that he personally trained?
I am suggesting that that might undermine the integrity of the court, and it's not as egregious as him, say, you know, refusing to recuse himself when it comes to cases involving his wife directly. But, you know, I mean, they're kind of that's a consistent theme with him, obviously.
But I think, you know, this example that Ketanji Brown Jackson brings up is so worthwhile to think about in the context of just about any time when you think about race in this country. There are things that, frankly, as white people, we're just not aware of. It's just like an added plus that we have the ability, like, oh, my ancestors went to, like, my parents went to this college and their parents went to this college. Legacy admissions help you. But they are, structurally speaking, at this time, at a point in time, even, I don't know, 50 years out from when black people were allowed to go into some of these colleges, it's still a structural obstacle to you getting into college. Because 50 years ago, you're a black person, the first time you're trying to, you know, your first person in your family trying to go to college, you're going up against people who've been legacies for, you know, one or two generations.
Yeah. They might have donated a building or two to that college.
Well, I mean, put aside that. Just like even just pure,
straight
up legacies. You know, you were not allowed to have a legacy. And then, yes, money becomes a big issue, too. If we know that, because of policies this country administered both in terms of like society, but also from a governmental level, that inhibited the accumulation of wealth by black people. We know that's a fact. Then the ability to sort of give a library or just even donate to a college or hire a college counselor or send the kids to getting, you know, SAT score, or, you know, training, or whatever it is, tutors, whatever it is that's going to help get into a college. There are all these structural things. And again, this is just one element in a bunch of different considerations that look in there. And I think in Harvard's case, like, they don't take anybody who's not in a certain percentage of the class of their high school class.
Discrimination. I mean, and also Harvard is a private entity, right? I mean, it is shocking that it seems like they're going to rule in a similar way for both of these cases, where UNC is at least, you know, a state university. Harvard is different. And there, I mean, maybe Roberts will try to split the difference on that, or I don't know, because he's, as always, jockeying for the reasonable position.
Oh, Roberts is, I think, vehemently against this.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can go back and look at the way they eviscerated the Voting Rights Act. They're all convinced this is over. The race is done.
Yeah.
I mean, they're convinced of it. They're absolutely convinced of it, 100%. And the real question is not, will Robert split the baby on this? And I don't know really at this point how you split the baby. Because
public,
it's pretty split. Pretty split.
Yeah.
The real question is, do they start applying this to all sorts of governmental programs that are meant in some way to help redress the structural imbalances that exist in our society because of the institutional racism that we have had or continues? So Roberts, no, he's like, when it comes to race, Roberts is really, he's highly motivated, as
okay,
we would say.
Okay, well, there we go.
Yeah, he's a go-getter in that respect. Let's play one more clip of this before we go into the fun half. The argument in the Bakke case, and then Grutter, and then in Fisher following that, was that diversity helps everyone. It helps the white students. It helps the black students. It helps the brown students. Helps the male students, the female students, the rich students, the poor students, the city students, the rural students. Diversity helps. Now, I just listed, I don't know what, 5 or 10 different, you know, factors. Gender diversity, racial diversity, ethnic diversity, national diversity, socioeconomic diversity, geographic diversity. I think we all know what that means. And if you do understand what I'm articulating, you are a little bit smarter than one of the Supreme Court justices. I give you Clarence Thomas, who has absolutely no idea what diversity means.
I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means. It seems to mean everything for everyone. And I'd like you first, you did give some examples in your opening remarks, but I'd like you to give us a specific definition of diversity in the context of the University of North Carolina. And I'd also like you to give us a clear idea of exactly what the educational benefits of diversity at the University of North Carolina would be.
Yes, Your Honor. So first, we define diversity the way this court has in its court's precedents, which means a broadly diverse set of criteria that extends to all different backgrounds and perspectives and not solely limited to race. And there's a factual finding in this record, PEDAP 113, that there are many different diversity factors that are considered as a greater factor in our admissions process than race.
I mean, to imagine the level of feigned ignorance you must have to pretend you don't know what diversity means in this context.
Yeah.
And also, imagine the feigned ignorance you must have to not understand the educational benefits of it. I mean, just a perfect example. And this is you know, arguably a little bit extreme, but, you know, education is a nuanced thing, and it's hard to see, you know, on the level of a university level exactly what it is. But there is an incredible disparity between toddlers who come from wealthy families and toddlers who come from poorer families in terms of their listening vocabulary when they enter into kindergarten. It's a big reason why there's universal pre-K. And the question is why? And it is quite settled as to why that is the case. It is because wealthy people expose their children, because of their money, to a wide variety of experiences and people. They go on trips. They live in the city, they go to the country. If they live in the country, they go to the city. They go to different places. They see different things. There are some kids, you know, kids who are living in poverty, who live in the city, they don't know what a llama is. Well, they see a llama. They don't know, like, they can't pick out a goat. They can pick out a dog or a cat, maybe. They might have more familiarity with a rat if you live in New York City than you would, like, you know, what a sheep looks like. Well, you're a wealthy kid. You're going on a trip to the farm. You're a wealthy kid. Maybe you fly in an airplane. Maybe you go to a foreign country. Maybe you hear a foreign language. Maybe you see different cuisines. It is so self-evident as to why surrounding yourself with diverse viewpoints and perspectives and life experiences is more of an educational benefit than not, that it's almost absurd to even raise this. Like, you honestly have to be generating, like, the ignorance.
Yeah, it's bullshit, right? Like, the idea that
it means everything to anybody. What the hell is it? I don't even know what that meant.
And it's been defined by the court. Like, this is pedantry, right? Like,
communication only works when you can share terminology. And the reactionaries, you see this with Jordan Peterson too, like, what does this word mean? We can't even know anything. That's just a refuge of a reactionary that doesn't actually want a conversation to go anywhere. Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, this is also the role that he wants to play on the Supreme Court, is to be the black voice on the court saying these kinds of things. He, not to psychoanalyze him as well, but, you know, he also probably tries to adhere to a anti-diverse, anti-anti-racist ideology, because then it completely validates him as one of the 9 most deserving of all of the judges that could ever ascend the throne. That's how these, like, people who treat themselves like priests view themselves as well.
I would be terrified to take a half a step into the psychology that is going on in his mind. But nevertheless, the idea that he doesn't know what diversity is hard to believe, either colloquially or in the fact that it's been literally defined in all of the precedents on which this case is going to overturn.
I need to watch this clip, but I found it on C-SPAN. Justice Thomas on the Court and Intellectual Diversity.
Oh.
So maybe we'll see.
What the hell does that mean?
What does he mean?
What does he mean by that?
What he means is we need to gerrymander spaces so that conservatives have an equal say.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's Chicago Steve. It has to be depressing to argue a case before this court. No matter what you write or say, the outcome was predetermined. Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Without a doubt.
I feel like that's as important of a mission, is to make sure that that's broadly understood by, like, people going into law. That, like, this is all fake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that...
How many times have we had people on the... Like, you know, Ian Millhiser wrote that book, what was it? Oh. 8 years ago? 6 years ago? I mean, we've had... it's been out there. It's just, I think, like, it is becoming more and more, I mean, really, it's not even the lay people, although the lay people are going to cause the pressure on the institutions, but it's going to be hard because, and as children of lawyers, I think we understand this. This is a religion to mm-hmm. them.
Yes.
And they are the priesthood. And they're finding out that, wait a second, the Pope has known about this scandal? This is where we're at.
Yeah.
Right now.
The Supreme Court justices have no clothes.
Exactly. Exactly. There's not a single legal, like a constitutional doctrine that they're arguing in, you know, you read this transcript. I'm sure maybe somebody else can find it, but it is, this case rests on their assessment that racism is not a problem anymore, that it's 2028, even if you could have put a number on it. At that time, I mean, Sandra Day O'Connor, like, she knew racism, boy, and she was going to give you a timeline on when racism goes away. It would have been great if she was correct or even remotely correct.
Yeah. And then it's just, I also just want to put this out there, too. They are attempting to, and when they eventually side with overturning affirmative action, they're attempting to censor these institutions and prevent them from doing the practices as they see fit, right? They should be able to engage in, I mean, I'm just using their own argument against them, but this is like a freedom of contract or a freedom of, you know, corporate decision-making argument that you can make against them. But
well, that's the thing, is that you would think that they're required to say that what they're doing is a violation of the 14th Amendment, but they're not making the argument on those grounds. But I guess we'll see what the decision is. We will have a legal expert on to talk about this more. I think probably maybe between now and June when they come out with this decision. But at least once. You know, the it is increasingly as much as I am interested in the sort of the legal arguments and the breakdowns of this, increasingly, it is it's harder to retain my interest in it, because it is so over. But I do think that there is value in laying it out and showing how much they are avoiding what these five or six, depending on the case, contend is their judicial approach, their philosophy in terms of the way that they resolve these cases. And because I think, like, showing, you know, it's clear they have no clothes, but examining some of the birthmarks on their body and
liver spots
and their liver spots and their pubes on a Coke can, as it were.
Yikes.
All part of the project here. With that said, we did not move into the fun half early today.
What?
Best laid plans,
plan foiled.
Folks. Plan foiled.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on the midterms. Maybe we'll do that.
We'll touch on that briefly in the fun half. AIPAC going after Summer Lee again. Hopefully they're not as successful in the context of a general election. But you got to love these guys. We're going to tell you who the true Democrat is in this primary, and then we're going to run against them. And it's a perfectly fine strategy if you're a Republican, but they were trying to get the more moderate Democrat.
Yes.
Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. There is no way that we could spend this amount of time talking about an affirmative action case and have an audience that would support it if it wasn't for you. That's just the bottom line. I mean, if we were a legal podcast, we could talk about it because that's what we would do. We would both be lawyers. We would be also, you know, this would be our part-time gig. Or, you know, maybe lawyers would listen to us exclusively, but we're not. And it is the support of our audience that makes it possible for us to take these type of deep dives and ones that are a little bit less obvious. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free half free of commercials, you get the fun half. And you help the show survive and thrive. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Great coffee, great company. You can get the Majority Report blend. Check it out. Emma! What's happening on ESVN?
Yesterday we spoke about
I'm just like still in the glow, the Pats.
Oh yeah.
Taking out the Jets 14 years in a row, right?
14 games.
14
I would not
games.
See. Yeah.
I guess it's 7 years.
But I'm not going to fact check that.
But it is
7 years.
It's amazing. Bill Belichick still has like not gotten over him leaving the Jets job and likes to just take it to them every time.
You know what occurred to me?
Yeah.
He's going to be here for at least one more season after this one.
Yeah.
Because he's going to go for Shula's win record.
Oh, yes, yes. I think that's what
it is. I'm encouraged by.
Right. I have some critiques of how he's handled the quarterback situation up there. But we did talk about Kyrie Irving's anti-Semitic promotion and comments, which just keeps getting worse and worse on the show. And we also just recapped the last week in the NFL, talked about, is the 2021 quarterback class like a total bust fest? Is it too early to say? And more. Check us out, youtube.com/ESVN show.
Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Yeah, tonight on Left Reckoning at 8 Eastern Time on YouTube, we'll be talking Lula's victory, talking about how he and his wife unfollowed each other as basically the first order of business. Also, we're talking with Dr. Kuba, Deep State Kuba of This Is Revolution, about lots of things, how one starts to work for the deep state, what a sort of actual civil service, diplomatic civil service should look like, and also be talking about Brazil. So check that out, patreon.com/leftreckoning to get the post game.
Wait, Lula and his wife stopped following each other on Twitter?
Sorry, did I say Lula? I meant Bolsonaro.
Oh, the same wife that went to the polls in the Israel shirt?
Yeah. Yeah.
So wait, Bolsonaro and his wife stopped following each other on Twitter?
Yeah, right after he lost, yeah.
Wow, sometimes big cataclysmic events can take its toll on a couple.
Hilarious.
I think Lula should do corruption and get an apartment like on the Bayside and Well, maybe not. I mean, Bolsonaro's wife seems pretty nasty, so maybe we won't.
Right, but I mean, he could do a Sam Cedar date with his wife and just
you should
debate
try to
her
date Bolsonaro's ex-wife.
You should. She's
I mean,
she's hot.
I'll keep an eye out for
yeah, and the right stuff. Sam,
I mean,
and Michelle Bolsonaro.
Hold on, I haven't checked the right stuff in days. All right, we're going to go to the fun half. When we get to the fun half, I will give you an update as to whether I have been admitted into the right stuff
and see if you can get an Israel shirt like her.
Oh, I got a bunch of those.
Okay. Good.
All right. We'll be right back for the fun half. 646-257-3920.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
No. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, no.
What, who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar! What a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
You see, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. Okay, I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on!
To pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.